Yet the woman gazing out the window offered no reply. After 20 long minutes, the woman behind her leaned in, peeking at the profile of the woman by the window. "You feeling all right? The supervisor's been watching you for a while now." Without seeing her face, her voice whispered secrets. Flat face, thin lips, small eyes, a narrow gaze between her brows. The woman by the window gave no answer to her friend's question. But hearing the supervisor was watching, she quickly lowered her head, hands working feverishly. A desperate, frantic effort, clear for all to see. 5:30, the woman huddled, trembling, in a corner of the dim room below. Torn sooty shoji screens facing west were closed tight. The floor was a grimy 3-mat room. No extra mats or comforts graced the floor. The woman just huddled in a corner, motionless. This was the same woman who moments ago gazed out the window. Always, when she saw a patch of blue sky through the clouds, her body's pain would fade. Then, scenes of her hometown, Komatsubara, with its gentle waves, would surface in her mind. Vivid memories of playing in Komatsubara as a child would bloom. They offered solace to her present aching self. It was for this joy that she looked to the sky, even today. Just 30 minutes ago, that was her world. A chilling dread enveloped her, as if suspended and lowered into a deep, hollow valley of snow. Inside her head, it felt like boiling lead, hot, heavy, and full of torment. Her veins in her limbs began to throb intensely, almost leaping. Her ears rang with a loud, frantic beat, like a quick strike bell. Her legs felt unsettlingly light, as if lifting, floating into the air. "Ah, the agony," she moaned, beginning to writhe. Clanking sounds of coal being shoveled beneath the engine filled the air. The engine's groaning, usually unheard, now clawed at her ears, reverberating deep within her gut. The fire blazed fiercely, and the sound of boiling water in the cauldron, along with the kettle's mournful cry. Regardless of the woman's suffering, smoke billowed from the tilted chimney, drifting north and south, each wisp finding its own way. Some wisps curled upwards as if yearning for the sky. Others chased fantasies, spreading low, creeping along. These smokes, each with its own fleeting thought, would vanish forever, brave yet ephemeral. And the dull tin roof, reflecting the shadows of the smoke above, remained eternally drab, a sluggish, cheerless face. The woman could endure it no longer, this endless waiting. She writhed, rolling in agony, but no one came to her side. She sensed the young man shoveling coal over there, but he wouldn't come here. She knew. Upstairs, the ceaseless rhythm of the weaving loom echoed. She was accustomed to this sound. Yet sometimes, she longed for a quiet place, where it couldn't reach her. She was tired of this sound, utterly weary. She woke to this sound every single day, and she must hear it until her eyes finally closed. If she were to die and go to a quiet place, this sound would fade, never to be heard again. She believed that only the blue sky could console her in this torment. Each time she saw the blue sky, for a moment, the pain in her chest would ease. It became her habit to dream of days gone by. Now, there was nothing else that could make her forget this pain, save for the blue sky. But this indescribable suffering within her body, would the blue sky truly offer solace? She couldn't tell. Several times the woman tried to stand, reaching for the shoji screen. Her legs faltered, refusing to hold her up. In her mind, she tried to conjure the feeling of seeing the blue sky. Light, cotton-like clouds drifted beneath dark, heavy ones. Watching them, the heavy, dark clouds slowly began to thin. Then they would split apart, revealing a patch of azure blue. She remembered her hometown, Komatsubara, where blue waves kissed the shore. At the edge of the pine grove, two railway tracks ran side by side. Along those tracks stood a tiny crossing guard's hut. An old man lived in the hut. Each time a train passed, he would wave a white flag. The surrounding scenery felt as vivid as if right before her eyes. For the third time, the woman tried to rise, only to fall back down. Her mind could no longer conjure these fantasies. Her vision blurred, a haze descending. Her thoughts began to scatter, unraveling. Her throat was parched. An urgent craving for something sour burned within her. The shoji screens faded from sight. The tatami mats, too, vanished. From all sides, gray walls seemed to loom and collapse, as if trying to crush her. No more coal shovels, no engine groans, no blue sky, no komatsubara. Only her desperate rolling, round and round the room. Her face darkened. Her body began to burn, as if set ablaze. Between the sooty, torn shoji screen and the zinc fence outside, there was barely 3 feet of space. The woman's agonized cries reached the path outside. On that dark, quiet afternoon, the village fell silent, no one stirring. Fearing the black-clad man's presence, doors were shut tight. Crows cried sadly in the temple grove. A doctor, a policeman, and a laborer arrived first, carrying bottles. They held 6-strength carbolic acid, lime, and other potent chemicals. Behind them, the pale, bloated village chief followed, lost in thought, heading for the textile company. The woman's nails, in her agony, had scratched the dark, worn tatami mats. Blood flowed from her fingertips. Her hair was disheveled, her eyes wide open, staring. She had gnashed her teeth so hard they might break. Blood spurted from her gums. The laborer scattered lime water and carbolic acid onto the walls of the dark room. The policeman stood stiffly on the threshold, still wearing his shoes. The supervisor grabbed the woman's dark hair, dragging her from the room. Then he washed his hands with carbolic acid. The doctor gently pulled back the woman's eyelid. "She must be sent to the isolation hospital right away," he declared. The supervisor, with his stern, triangular face, glared at the woman with a hateful, sidelong glance. "She'll need to rest for about 3 weeks now," he said. He spoke to the bloated-faced village head standing close by. The heavy thrum of machinery drifted into earshot. The pungent smell of carbolic acid filled the room, sharp enough to sting the nose. The faint stains of disinfectant on the shoji screens seemed to tint the darkening gray sky outside. A dim lamp flickered on the second floor. Just then, the woman was carried out of the company gate on a simple wooden plank. From the second floor, faces emerged to watch her leave. Women with flat noses, thin lips, and round, pale complexions. One of them spoke, her voice sharp and high. Then, 2 or 3 women's faces broke into a fleeting laugh. The supervisor must have scolded them, it seemed, for the women's faces instantly withdrew, and the glass pane slid shut with a soft thud. A soft glow from the lamp was still visible. The woman, draped in a white blanket from head to foot, followed the path, hugging the zinc fence, moving towards the temple. The policeman and the doctor walked ahead. The village head accompanied them, close by her side. The woman made no move to lift her blanket, not even to gaze at the vast sky above. And just then, through the temple's chestnut tree, a glimpse of bright blue sky broke through. The village head walked in silence beside the woman, his head bowed, lost deep in thought. The policeman and the doctor spoke softly now and then. As the plank left the village, entering the narrow path, through the wide rice fields, the woman's eyes fluttered open just a fraction. It was that hour when faces begin to blur, barely seen. The desolate thicket of trees loomed dark, tinged with a mournful hue. The village head turned to the woman, asking softly, "Did you see the man in black?" Jostled by the movement, the woman heard him. But thinking she might have misheard, she offered no reply to the village head's question. The bloated-faced village head leaned forward slightly and asked the same question in a hushed tone. "You saw the black man, didn't you?" That's what echoed in the woman's ears. Yet the meaning eluded her. Again, she thought she might have misheard and remained silent, offering no reply. The woman wondered why he wouldn't lean close, whisper the question into her ear. But the village head, fearing the risk of bending even slightly or staying so near, found the thought of putting his mouth to her ear utterly unthinkable. From that moment on, the village head never asked her about it again. Through her suffering, the woman pondered the meaning of the village head's words. "Didn't you see the man in black?" She searched her memory, asking herself, "When I looked out the window, did I see a man in black walking along the path?" What clearly rose before her eyes was the vibrant hue of a blue sky where clouds had gently parted. And from beyond the white road that lay beneath, did a man in black walk into view? Lime, bleached by the wind, had hardened and fallen beneath the wallboards. Inside the house, a quiet, cold presence reigned. It was unheard of for the isolation hospital to be open and accepting patients at this hour. Ancient superstitions, long dormant beneath the stones, had now reawakened. Red papers and abalone shells were hung upon the gateposts of every home. The wind, blowing beneath the cloudy skies of the northern land, where flowers were yet to bloom, carried a chilling touch. It made the red papers flutter, fragile and forlorn. The chilling fear spread from village to village. "Did you not see the black man? They say he walks among us." Of course, this unfolded in the secluded villages nestled deep between the mountains. The very thought of slaying the black man had vanished from their minds, for such a man could not be slain. Instead, they whispered of a curse, a dark omen, leading to a prayer ceremony in the village today. The shadow of the plague now stretched across 50 villages. Fine pustules like smallpox bloomed across the body. A searing fire consumed them, turning skin crimson. Finally, they would blacken and then die. Patients died in that village, and now today, in this one too. To the isolation hospital, they were sent an endless stream, one after another. The road lay dry and pale, beneath a sky shrouded in clouds. In front of the village stonemason's shop, rough-hewn stones were stacked and leaned. On the stones, scattered early plum blossoms, a petal or two clinging, looked anything but spring-like, rather forlorn. When the wind stirred, the withered bamboo leaves, tucked into the gate, began to rustle. The leaves were utterly withered, bleached to a pale, ghostly white. The temple bell tolled. It sounded like a somber call to awaken the sick from their pillows. A heavy, dull sound. An echo of death it was. Fear, anxiety, and ancient superstition now held the village in their grip. "Did you see the man in black?" The mournful sound of the bell still echoed.